Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
Welcome back to Peak Speak. I'm Thomas Lilly. With me today, and on most of these podcasts, / all of these podcasts, John Sheridan.
Hey guys.
How you doing?
Oh wait, you were asking me.
You're good. Excellent.
How are you?
Oh, I'm great, thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you very much. We're out here today at Burley Strength in Canberra, which is John's gym.
It is.
And today's podcast episode is all going to be around coaching cues.
Yes.
We're both coaches. We both...
That is a fact.
...use cues.
Also a fact.
Most coaches.
So far, this is an entirely factual podcast.
Right. So, in one of our earlier episodes, we talked about systems.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking at a system as a macro, breaking it down into microsystems, technique is a big element of that system.
Yeah.
As coaches, with our technical coaching, we're trying to elicit a certain look, which is a representation, an expression of rules of what we believe needs to be part and parcel of good technique, regardless of people's individualities. And part of those rules, or part of creating that look, is being able to communicate information to lifters with different learning styles, different understandings, and that's where cues come into play.
Yeah.
Talking a lifter through how to elicit what we want their body to do.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you haven't already watched the episode on systems, I'd go back and have a look at that now. Well, not now, maybe later. At some point, you should probably watch them all anyway. We're great at what we do. So I think like cues are really important, obviously, right? How you use the cues, what makes a good cue, all those things are really relevant, because there are plenty of bad cues.
Definitely.
And we'll definitely touch on that further down, further through to today's proceedings. Initially, we want to talk about what makes a good cue, right? Now, I think there are several factors that go into making a good cue, and ultimately, as you touched on, like, everyone has a different learning style, and everyone has a different way of thinking, responds better to different types of cues, those sort of things. So I think it's important to look at like types of cues. For one, I think the big sort of categories I always put them into are internal or external. Like, are you thinking about what your body's doing, or are you thinking about what you're doing to your surroundings, right? So like bend the bar versus turn your lats on,
mm-hmm.
those sort of things, right?
Yes.
Some people respond better to internal cues, some people respond better to external cues. Learning types is really important. Do you respond better to visual learning? Are you a better kinesthetic learner? Like, do you do better when I touch you and put you in the right positions? Those sort of things are really important. And then looking at like what actually makes a good cue,
mm-hmm.
right? Like what can you do to make it a good coaching cue?
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest one, it has to be succinct,
mm-hmm.
right? Like having a lifter who thinks about, and this is why I always talk about a system, right? I always liken it to the idea of like a checklist, right? In your checklist, you probably only want, like, from a technical lifting standpoint, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but when I talk about cues and systems, I talk about the idea that, like, for an individual lift, you probably only want 3 to 5 cues.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think any more than that is too many. And each of those cues should really only be 1 or 2 words.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have to think about an entire essay of coaching cues as you go up to squat, you're going to get confused. You're going to start to miss things. Things are going to drop out of your system, and that's when your performance suffers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think being succinct is a really important
Definitely.
Part of a good cue.
I think the important thing that we're going to keep coming back to is that cues are very secondary to the effect that they're trying to elicit.
Yeah, you can use pineapples as a cue if it
brings on the right response.
Exactly.
It's also important that cues are not global and they're not concrete. Technique is very fluid. What you're doing with your technique will change as you as you go through a process, as so let's look at this at a very basic level. If I tell you do a squat, I don't have to say bend your knees, push down into the floor and come back up. So that's a useless cue because you do that automatically. Yeah. So it's about cueing what needs help at that given point in time and being resigned to the fact that that will change over time.
Yeah, so a cue has to be appropriate, right? Yes. To both the lift. So you're not going to give a cue for the squat in a bench press.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's some carry or some crossover there. That's definitely a potential area that we can look at. But with a lot of it, it's about being appropriate for the lift that's being performed, the situation that they're in. So potentially the cues you're giving at the end of a set of 10 reps are going to be different to the cue you would give at the start of a one rep max.
Yes.
Because there are different things that crop up with fatigue and that sort of thing. But it also has to be appropriate to the lifter and the level that they're at. Yes. So as using your example, like I know how to squat, the cues you would give me would be very different to the cues that you would give someone who's never squatted before.
Definitely.
Because you might genuinely tell someone, okay, bend your knees, bring your hips down to you can't anymore and stand back up.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a really basic coaching cue, but it's a cue nonetheless that is valid. Because for someone who's never squatted before, that might be what they need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be appropriate to the lifter and that particular lifter's individual circumstances.
Uh-huh. You touched on systems and a systematic approach to technique as well. When I'm teaching coaches how to coach, I always talk about there being kind of three levels of difficulty when it comes to technical coaching, right? Yep. Level one is identifying, like a visual representation of what's good or bad. So like we know if your knees are caving in and touching each other while you're squatting up, that's bad. Everyone knows that, right? The next level of understanding is, why is that actually happening? Because this lifter isn't thinking, shove my knees in together and squat back up. There's a mechanical breakdown happening somewhere down the flow, the stream, whatever you want to say. And the third level of difficulty is being able to coach them out of that. Now, why that is the third level, why that is so difficult, is because it's not just a visual cue.
It's a communication thing as well.
Yeah, well, it's understanding the complex biomechanics of that. So the knees aren't caving in because the person's thinking, cave your knees in. So just saying, shove your knees out is not necessarily the fix if there's a complex biomechanical breakdown happening. Our job with cueing is not just to elicit a response to what we want to see visually, but it's what we want to see biomechanically.
Yeah,
which is how it appears is going to be secondary to that.
And I think on that process, it's also important to understand the end point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've recently been talking more about the idea that I don't remember who sort of came up with the idea, but people talk about there are four levels to mastering any skill, right? The first one is unconscious incompetence. So you just don't know what you're doing.
Yep.
And you don't know whether it's good or bad. You just don't know. The second one is conscious incompetence. So you know when you do it wrong. Now, I always say that if it feels sketchy, it's sketchy. Like your body's really good at telling you that. Not many people are very good at listening to that. So conscious incompetence, you know when you do it wrong. You then have conscious competence, which is you can do it well, but you have to think really hard and really deliberately about doing it well, which is the point that a lot of people get to and then often don't make the transition into the final stage, which is unconscious competence, where it just happens.
Just happens.
Right? The story I tell all the time is my best equipped squat, 410 kilos. I don't actually remember the squat. I remember unracking the bar, thinking, fuck, that feels really heavy. And then I remember about 2/3 of the way up becoming conscious again and being like, oh, I've got this.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, I had thousands of reps in that same pattern, with that same process, with the same execution, so that under stress, my body just let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the ultimate goal, right? And a lot of people forget that, especially from a coaching perspective. They forget that the goal is autonomy, right? We want a lifter who doesn't need coaching cues.
Yes, and I've heard you talk about the timing of cueing. you know, like competition day versus training. Your training is the time to cue.
Yeah.
That is the time to practice cue. You know, what I always say to people is that the next time you max out, the next time you go for a max, the next time you're in a competition, your technique is going to be the average of what you've done in training.
Yeah.
All the thinking is happening in the training. That is the practice time. That is when we're cueing you hard as coaches. That's when we're really, really trying to make things natural and autonomous. Comp day cueing is a little bit different.
Yeah, 100%. We talked about it in the episode around what makes a good coach and a case for coaching. This idea that, like, if you get to the platform and I have to give you a list of cues to think about, I haven't done my job. My job in training is to be so on top of what you're doing that you don't need me on comp day. Mm-hmm. Apart from maybe you've got this mm-hmm. or some piece of encouragement, right?
Yeah.
Because at that point, it's just reinforcing what's already happened.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that's the gold standard. The reality is that
some lifters need
that and want it.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. But from my point of view, I'm always shooting for a lifter who doesn't need it.
Yeah, exactly. We want to create the gold standard.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we're working towards. It's kind of impossible perfection almost.
So I think the thing with when to cue, understanding the purpose behind the cues is really important, right? You can say knees out all you want, like you said, but if you don't know how to get that response, like saying knees out on the way up from a squat, probably not going to be very effective because at that point it's too late.
Yeah, lost position.
Exactly, right? So I think understanding when in the lift to cue that is really important, not just when in a global aspect, like training versus competition, that's obviously important. But understanding where that fits into the timing within the lift and how each step in that process is really important and has its own place. And if you get that sequence wrong, then you're going to be in trouble. Mm-hmm. That, and again, is always going to come back to this idea of systems. This idea that to be really good at this, you need the process that works every time. And that process shouldn't really change rep to rep, set to set. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things I've been working on more and more in my own, from my own coaching point of view, is, but also in the way I teach, is not cueing new and relatively novice lifters different things between reps, mm-hmm. right? A lifter like you or I, experienced enough to be able to adjust things on the fly, right?
Yes.
Because your average is pretty good.
Yeah.
So when you make a mistake, you know how to correct it. Mm-hmm. It's that conscious competence, yes. right? A lot of lifters are unconscious in that. And so if you try and change one thing,
something else falls apart.
Yeah. So the big thing I've been preaching in the last few months to new lifters especially is this idea that you have a system and what happened on rep one doesn't affect what happens on rep two. Don't change how you think about it. Just go back to your system. Because I think when you go, oh, my knees came in on that first one, so I'll focus on my knees going out. Suddenly your chest caves or you lose your brace or like something else in that system fails because the underlying base of the system isn't sound enough. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I mean, I think on that with newer lifters is that they try to think about everything at once.
Yeah.
With newer lifters, when I'm cueing them through, I try to set up more of a process where they take their time between reps.
Yes.
Where they can actually think about things individually. Yeah. And it's like, lock one thing in, that's done. Forget about it. Just keep squeezing it. Do this. And like you said, keep it succinct. Just one or two real key things to focus on for that set, for that day, whatever. And nail it. And then we build on that. And then those initial cues become autonomous.
Yeah.
And then we add more cues. And
exactly.
And it's an ongoing process. It doesn't change.
And I think in that, it's important to recognize that you have to be able to take the low-hanging fruit. Right? If I have a lifter that comes in, or a person that comes in that's never really lifted before, and they squat with their feet dead straight and their knees touching, I'm probably not going to talk to them about bracing. Because at that point, how they brace is inhibited largely by the way they're standing. Right? So I'm going to fix their stance first. I'm going to pick the low-hanging fruit. I'm going to take that easy thing. Oh, we put your feet in a better position, we just open your knees up a little bit, suddenly you can squat way deeper. Then we'll talk about bracing.
Yeah.
But it's understanding the level of priority for each thing, right? What a elite level lifter is prioritizing in their lift is far different from what a newer novice level lifter is prioritizing. So it's important to recognize that what you hear someone say to an elite level lifter is often not what's going to be most relevant for a new or novice level lifter. Mm-hmm. Right? Understanding where you fit in that process and what you're focusing on at any one point is really important.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people fuck that up.
Yeah.
Regularly. I think a lot of people try and focus on the minutia when they should instead be focusing on bigger picture things.
Exactly. I think there's too many cues out there that are focusing on things that are so secondary to these magical rules we keep referring to. Like, so for example, if I'm building a squat, I have this hierarchy of rules and I have three main rules that I want to achieve.
Yeah.
The first rule is about getting them to use their hips most effectively, because that, you know, hip stability is going to determine the depth you can hit, what your knees are doing, all that kind of stuff. So getting them to learn how to use their hips. As part of that is the next rule, which is learning how to brace. And then as part of that is the next rule, which is upper back tightness, because it's about taking power from the hips, transferring it through that brace into the bar, which is where the upper back fits in. So when those three rules are achieved, we can make individual changes, right?
Yeah.
But there's too many people that focus on cues which focus on things that are so secondary to the rules. Like, for example, head position and what your head's going to do. So they're so obsessed with putting their head in this one position that other rules fall apart in the process.
Yeah, exactly.
Or so obsessed with having their feet in this particular angle or their hands in this particular spot.
I had someone just yesterday, I was coaching through a squat. Oh, like, is where my hands... Okay, I said, well, does it hurt? No. Okay, cool. That's all that I care about at the moment. Because I'm too concerned at the moment about getting your stance right and making sure you understand how to use your hips. Where your fucking hands go isn't going to change that much.
Yeah.
As you get further down that road and you become better at the basics, sure, you can start to play with the minutia. Like, hand position is really relevant. And like you said, upper back tightness is definitely relevant. But if you can't brace your abs and you don't know how to move your hips, where you put your hands on the fucking bar doesn't matter.
Uh-huh. So we have to focus on those things first. We focus on the rules, and then those little cues come in. And, you know, we keep talking about these differences in experience, and I think it's really, really important to emphasize here that, especially if you're in a gym with coaches, if you're in a gym like this where there's experienced people around, gyms like this would yell cues at each other.
Yeah.
You know? And they're not global. They don't apply to everyone. And I think too often, or the mark of a good cue is that it elicits the response in the person that it's directed at.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean it works on you.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, like I said before, like, you could use the word pineapples as a perfectly valid coaching cue if it means something to that particular lifter.
Exactly.
So for some people, they need a cue, and you might use two very different cues for the same, to elicit the same response.
Yes, in different people.
Yeah, exactly. And that comes back to that idea of learning styles. It comes back to that idea of experience and these sort of things where you can't have a one-size-fits-all approach, right? And sure, there'll be some common ground.
Yeah, we're all doing the same thing.
It's the same movements. It's those sort of things. You start to see, as a coach, I certainly know there are patterns, right? Like, most people, especially because everyone spends their life at a desk, need some work on getting into the right position in a squat. Those sort of things, right? There are common ground. But then it's about taking those common cues that apply to a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people, and then modifying them to work for that particular individual.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the real skill of coaching comes in.
Definitely.
Anyone can throw a cue at a lifter. Like, anyone can say knees out. If you don't actually understand why you're getting your knees out, then the validity of your cue is suddenly...
And it's back to those three levels of understanding that I was talking about. It's really, really easy to get people to look like they're doing good technique.
Yes.
A big part of when experienced powerlifters come to me, they're coming to me and they want to get better at powerlifting. A lot of them are performing the power lifts in what looks like powerlifting technique.
Yes.
Because they've learned to produce the look without the understanding of the mechanics, without the understanding of how to actually use it. A big one, and it's a real common one, is the arching bench, right? Producing an arching bench is not that difficult, but using your arching bench, understanding the transfer of leg drive, understanding the importance of bracing, understanding the importance of squeezing yourself into thoracic extension. Once you start to teach people what that all means, what that all feels like, changes the game, It's not just about how it looks, but why it looks.
Yeah, and I think that's the mark of a really a reasonably high level coach, is someone who like I can't necessarily speak for you, but I know I can see someone's squat style based almost entirely on how they walk through the door. Because as I've become more experienced as a coach, one of the big things I'm fascinated with is human movement as a whole, right? And I often, especially for like a quite a significant portion of my gym members aren't elite level powerlifters and never will be and have no desire to be. They are people who want to be stronger and fitter and healthier, and they use powerlifting as a vehicle for that.
Yes.
For those people, I tell them that what we're teaching you is human movement, and that human movement applies to everything you do outside of the gym. And I think a good coach can start to see how people move and start to understand before you've ever seen someone put a bar on their back. You can see how they're going to end up looking. And you can see those little things that people don't often see, right? I can't count the number of times I've filmed someone do a lift and I've said, oh, did you feel this happen? They say, no. And I show them the video and they go, I can't see it.
Yeah.
And then you slow the video right down and they go frame by frame and it's like right there. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Like, how did you ever see that? Well, I've done this for the last 6 or 7 years and I do it every day. I see things that most people don't see because you develop that coaching heart.
Definitely.
Right?
And one of the most rewarding things then as a coach is when they start to feel it, when
yes.
they start to recognize
yes.
it and become, what were you saying before, consciously
competent.
Consciously competent. When
and
they
then,
start, you're like, yeah, I'm...
I now know when I'm doing it in the right position.
Yeah, that's very rewarding as a coach.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
On that movement subject, it's the same with interlift differences. You can watch someone squat and see certain weaknesses, see certain movement deficiencies, and you're like, I can, you know, with 99% accuracy say what your deadlift's going to look like.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I can tell you where your bench is going to fall apart
yep.
based on that.
I actually always start with the squat. When I have a new lifter, that's the first thing we go through.
Stop, yeah.
Because a lot of the fundamental principles that I teach in the squat apply to everything else. But also, I'm actually using it as an assessment. Like, I can tell a lot about you as a person by how you squat.
Uh-huh.
Whether I judge you on that or not,
uh-huh.
we know. Who knows? But what I'm doing in that is teaching you the principles, but also looking at what does your upper back do in the squat, because that's going to have some relevance to how you bench.
Uh-huh.
What's your bracing like, because that's going to have some serious relevance to how you deadlift. You know, how do your hips move? Because again, that's going to have some relevance to how you deadlift. What are your limb proportions like? That's going to have some impact upon your ability to deadlift in different stances. So I think a really good coach from that perspective can take a cue in one area, but actually apply it to different things.
Yes, because it's an eliciting of feeling,
yeah.
and then the lifter learns how to understand that feeling, and you can give them tools to help them find that feeling in other areas.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's really at the heart of what a good cue does.
Yeah. Because ultimately it's about what it feels like, right? And that's why most of the gyms, like the gyms that Thomas and I own, won't have many mirrors in them. I have no desire as a coach to look at myself in a fucking mirror all day. But also, and more importantly, I don't want a lifter to see it in a mirror.
No.
I want a lifter to be able to feel it.
Feel it, yeah.
Because A, in competition, from a pure powerlifting perspective, you're not going to have a mirror there. I mean, you could bring one, that'd be weird. But you're probably not going to have a mirror there. So it's not very effective as a tool for learning. You also, what you see in a mirror isn't what's happening. You get all kinds of parallax errors based on what angle you're looking at the mirror, those sort of things. But also, if you're concentrating on what's happening in that mirror, you're not connected with what your body is doing.
Exactly. And you're probably only, because of your focusing on a focal point, you're only looking at one thing.
Exactly.
Rather than the whole system.
Exactly. And it's really important to understand that what it feels like is the gold standard, right? If it feels good, it probably was good. If it feels sketchy, it was probably sketchy. In most cases.
Yeah.
There are some exceptions to that, obviously. But I think the ultimate goal with any lifter I'm coaching especially is to get them to know what a good squat feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And know what a bad squat feels like. And know how to take a bad squat and make it a good squat.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I say a lot in my coaching is chase that feeling.
Yeah.
You know, when we achieve a really good squat, I'm like, rep 2. Remember that, chase that.
Yep, one of the first questions I ask every lifter.
How'd that feel?
Yeah, so fucking often, man. It's the first thing I say to people.
Yep.
How'd it feel? Or my other favorite one is, which rep felt the best?
Uh-huh.
Like, we did a set of 3, which one felt the best?
Mm-hmm.
Cool, do you know why it felt the best?
Uh-huh. And, you know, the best feeling, you know, it's important to define that it's not necessarily comfortable.
No.
Because, you know, We want to be uncomfortably tight in all of our lifting. It's about what feels, it's normally around efficiency.
Yeah.
What felt strongest, shortest.
Yeah.
That's kind of the best feeling that we're
chasing.
And
you know what? You can often see it in their eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
They do it and they're like,
yeah, whoa.
Yeah, like what the fuck happened there?
Yeah.
That weight felt really light.
Uh-huh.
That's a good feeling. And
yeah.
That's the feeling you want to chase. And I think understanding what that feeling is and what you're looking for, like fuck, you might go weeks without hitting a perfect squat.
Mm-hmm.
When you do again, you're like, oh, there it is.
There it is, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And at its heart, that's what good cueing is doing.
Yeah, exactly. Eliciting the feeling and teaching you how to be in that position all the time.
Yes. Bad cue.
Bad cueing.
Bad
cue. There's such a...
There are a lot of bad cues.
Oh, so many bad cues.
So the first thing I want to touch on... I've been kind of chomping at the bit about this because I'm very...
Thomas has been talking about doing an episode on bad cueing since we recorded the first one of these episodes about 6 months ago.
So, yeah, cueing is something I'm quite passionate about. One thing I really dislike...
Not just lining up for things, but...
Well, yeah, bad cueing is bad.
I want to stand in lines.
Yeah, exactly. One thing that really irks me is... global benchmarks and cues that aim to achieve global benchmarks. So in English, what I mean by a global benchmark is a particular look or a particular thing that doesn't necessarily apply to everyone or doesn't apply to most people. So let me give you an example. One global benchmark is more upright on a squat is better, right? What that says is most upright on the squat, torso perfectly straight up and down is best.
Yep.
Which ignores the number one rule of squats, which is we want to be loading up the hips. Biomechanically, to load up the hips, we need hip extension. The hips have to travel back. Your torso needs to lean forward to maximize that.
Yep.
If you're trying to stay upright, you're doing one of two things. You either have your heels extremely elevated so your knees can travel directly forward, or you're arching your back as hard as you can, which is ignoring rule number two, which is about power transfer from the hips to the bar, which is going to need a neutral braced spine.
Yeah.
Right? So immediately that global benchmark, an upright squat is good, all of a sudden becomes really negative for more than one reason.
Yeah.
And I think that's where cueing can go really, really wrong.
Oh, yeah.
It's this incomplete understanding. It's not bad logic.
No.
Right? It's not necessarily... It's incomplete logic. It's like, okay, well, chest up is a good thing. What chest up is a good thing is saying is not that we need to keep our chest up. It's saying that chest caving is a bad thing.
So I've always... one of the best ones with this was... For a while, there was a bit of heated internet debate around... the idea of knees out in a squat, right? And one of the things that was said by one of the proponents of the cue knees out was actually what they're trying to elicit with the cue knees out is knees not in.
Mm-hmm.
But knees out's easier to say.
Yeah.
Right? And so at that point, it's the same thing, right? When you're saying chest up, it's not because we need your chest to be more up, it's because we need your chest to be knocked down. But it's easier to say chest up.
Yeah.
Right? And I think going back to the upright torso thing, as long as you're taking the factors into account and really paying attention to that, you're going to be okay. More upright doesn't necessarily work for someone with a very short torso and very long femurs. They're going to be more bent over than the average person.
Yeah.
Right? And that's where understanding the difference between a cue or a principle and a cue.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
In principle, you should be able to keep a relatively neutral torso position.
Yes.
In practice, cueing that is going to be different depending on whether you have a very long torso and short femurs or very short femurs and a long torso. And...
So it's understanding the principles of the system.
Yes.
Bad cueing ignores that.
Exactly.
And just chases a particular look or a particular arbitrary benchmark.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is perpetuated by a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, and this frustration is born of the fact that I coach so many people out of bad cueing, out of excessive arching and squatting, out of excessive tucking and benching, out of things that trying to elicit a particular look that ignore the fundamental principles.
And especially as like things like excessive tucking and lift in the bench, some of those cues come from a different type of lifting.
Yeah, I mean,
like tucking your elbows in a bench shirt, makes more sense than it does not in a bench shirt, because you can wind that shirt up and you can get more tension out of the shirt. It's still not going to be excessive, mm-hmm. but it's people applying cues from one aspect to another aspect where there isn't actually any crossover.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, the tucking thing is a funny one, because what they're trying to achieve, the elbows to track slightly inwards, which should happen when you bench.
Yeah.
But, you know, but people are really limited in understanding what particular things, what particular ideals are actually creating. So those elbows tracking in are coming from external rotation at the shoulder.
Yeah.
Cueing your elbows in is cueing this, cueing external rotation, not by saying external rotation, because that's a very convoluted cue, but chasing this effect are two very different biomechanical things and will result in two very biomechanically different benches where one is good and one is really, really limited.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it all comes back to that understanding the principles, right? That's the really important part. You can use just about any cue in the world as long as it elicits the response that you need from a lifter.
Mm-hmm.
One of the worst things you can do, I think in many cases, is, and you see it a lot in, or I see it a lot in competitions, but I think one of the worst things you can do is try and talk a lifter through the whole lift, right? From like, okay, we're gonna set up under the bar, big breath in, step back. Like, I've seen people literally have a cue for every millisecond of a squat. It's like, well, if that's a 10-second squat, that's a lot of fucking cues to think about, right? I think if you can have two or three cues that catch large pieces of that, you're gonna be much more efficient. And it's gonna get the message across more. It's that idea of being succinct, right? Say what you need to say in as few words as possible.
Uh-huh.
As I've gotten better as a coach, I say less.
Yes.
Because I can get the response with less words.
Mm-hmm.
I had the last group I did with my powerlifting fundamentals course, a 6-week long course. One of the lifters commented like, week 4 or week 5, she was like, you say a lot less now than you did in week 1.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, because you don't need as much.
Yes.
Because you understand the principles now. So you just need reminders
uh-huh.
rather than direction.
Yes.
And that's what a cue should be, right? A good cue should be a reminder, not a direction.
Because
if it's a direction, then you can't do it without the cue.
Yeah.
But actually, ultimately, the goal is to just remind you of those key factors in your particular movement to then be able to get the response that we need.
Uh-huh. And the more you understand biomechanically, systematically with movements, the less cueing you need to give anyway. So for example, the knees out on squats, right? The knees are traveling out because of two fundamental things, which is external rotation of the femur and abduction, right? If you're just cueing knees out, really you're just cueing abduction, which can ignore one of the fundamental principles of squats. So what you're really trying to achieve is tightness, pelvic stability, tightness around the pelvis, so your hips can work more effectively. And you can use one cue to cover bracing and hip tightness, which is gonna cover the knees, which is gonna cover the brace, which is gonna cover hip tightness, all in one go, rather than this like far removed cue, which is just saying knees out.
Yeah.
You know, it's ignoring upstream factors that again affect what's happening there.
Yeah.
And so it's about cueing what's causing
things. Yeah, you're cueing the problem, not the symptom.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is, people always, or I often talk about like, if you get pain in a lift, right, it's not often, that's not the problem.
Yes.
That particular pain, like your elbows.
Elbow pain on bench.
Yeah.
Low bar squatting.
Yeah, exactly. I say all the time, like, people go, oh, my elbows hurt on my bench. Cool, show me how you squat.
Yeah.
And they all look at me real like, funny.
What?
Yeah. It's like, well, it's because I know from experience that if your elbows hurt in the bench, it's probably because you have a suboptimal position in the squat, that's putting heaps of pressure on your elbows, and that is then exhibiting itself as pain in the bench press.
Mm-hmm.
The bench press isn't the problem. Sometimes it is. Like, sometimes there are parts of that that are adding to the problem.
Uh-huh.
But overall, that problem, or that symptom, is just a symptom. It's just that, right?
Symptomatic of the problem.
Exactly. And so I think a really good cue is a cue that addresses the cause of the problem, not the symptom.
Uh-huh.
Which is why, like, knees out works. But if you don't understand that your knees have to go out by creating tight hips and all that sort of stuff, then just saying knees out doesn't do anything. Because I've seen plenty of lifters squat and their knees basically come in and then almost instantaneously they go back out again. It's like, well, if you just got your knees out like that, you probably didn't actually create any tension around the hip. You didn't do anything there that's actually going to get something out of that knees out cue You just know that your knees shouldn't be in, and so you got them out again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like cueing through accessory movements, right? Through movements that are supposed to bolster up the main lifts. It's really easy, like especially little stability stuff. It's really easy to do a movement with no real effect, or to use or not get the best effect out of that movement because you're not cueing through what that movement is aiming to achieve.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, cueing is...
Excellent. Yeah. So, I think we sort of start to come to a natural endpoint because I feel like we're just going to keep harping on about the same thing over and over and over.
Definitely.
If you could give any coach or any lifter sort of one real piece of advice around the best way to think about cueing or the best sort of aspect of the whole cueing process, what would that be?
It would have to come back to those rules. Coming back to the rules, coming back to understanding what we were talking before about symptoms versus cause, understanding the cause, treating the cause, cueing the cause, creating better biomechanical movement patterns. So from a cueing perspective, it's about getting deeper than just visual appearance.
Yeah.
Although the cueing is going to eventually elicit a certain visual appearance.
It's not the goal.
That's not the goal. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's about fixing the movement, understanding the movement.
Yeah. I think that is a perfect place to end things. Where can our wonderful audience find you, Thomas?
You can find me on Facebook and the Instagram. My gym is PTC Gold Coast. Post a bit of content through there. Most of my content is posted through my personal pages. So Thomas Lilly on Facebook, TomBro7 on Instagram. Very contactable. Send me a message. I will get back to you. What about yourself, Dr. Sheridan?
Dr. Sheridan, I like that.
PhD in...
Gains?
I was going to say coffee.
I'll take that too.
Or beer.
Both.
All of the above.
Burgers?
Burgers.
So my gym, Burley Strength, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram. You can find me on Facebook, John Sheridan, and I'm on Instagram at @Shero_BurleyStrength. Like Thomas, I post a bit of content on the gym page. I probably post... mostly just amusing content on my own page, and dog photos and coffee and beer and burgers.
Yes. So any questions at all, slide our DMs.
Slide right in there.
Thank you for watching. Till next time.